Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure.
Exciting. Schmiding.
But it's exciting. There's bagpipes playing in the background, and we're filling up walls with English dead.
I think it's exiting. Exiting. People are leaving. That's what we tend to mean. It's just a matter of, you know, one letter difference in the word. It's really nice to say exciting, but when people are exiting.
Well, now it's part of the modern movement. X-I-ting. That's I-ting. It's kind of like an iPhone or an iPad. It's I-ting.
Okay.
It used to be, it's X, and then followed by I-ting.
So it used to be an I-ting?
Yeah, it used to be an I-ting. You know, I-ting.
It sounds like a Jamaican talking about, my goodness. We're taking words apart already in the morning.
I-ting is good, yeah?
Yes.
Do you have an I-ting? Well, igniting.
Yeah, igniting.
So there's lots of words with I-ting in it.
Yeah.
It's probably actually an Oriental term.
It's east-facing?
Well, I-ting. I mean, NG is the most common last name, surname in China.
Mm-hmm.
But just NG.
Yeah. Ng. Ng. Ng.
No, but there's no I in there, so it's ng.
I somehow don't think that you're pronouncing it the way they do.
Oh, okay.
Just a hunch.
So, obviously, it's somebody's name, you know, like Tuning. If you ever go to a concert,
Where
like an orchestra is playing a symphony, for example, mm-hmm. and just before the symphony plays, they play Oriental music. You can hear it down there. They call it tuning. And then the older brother gets to take
I'm
over.
Not touching
whose
this.
Name was Play. Here. Two and Play were brothers, you see.
I am not. I
and
am
then
not.
Playing.
Seriously, I'm not.
It's what they do
this.
Afterwards.
Good luck with that. And hopefully that will.
Well, it does sound an awful lot like Chinese music to me when they're doing that.
It's because it converts between chromatic scale and pentatonic scale.
Whoa, man, great? Are you cool? You got chromatic pentatonic.
Yeah, you're stretching strings and turning knobs to see.
It's part of string theory.
Boy, we better change the subject
Why?
To something that people are, because people are exiting right now. This is the most exiting show I've ever heard.
This is a very exiting show, yes. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and anyone else or thing else that happens to be out there listening to us, if you would like to call in, well, I guess we better disclose first. Do we give the telephone numbers first?
Let's disclose first.
Okay. The Personal Wealth Coach is an insanity. No.
Yeah, that, well, I think, yes, it qualifies.
It's an insane organization. The Personal Wealth Coach is has two identities. Ding, ding. Hear the two identities?
Oh, boy.
One is a
dual personality.
One is a slightly insane radio presentation that comes on Saturday mornings, and the other one is
a slightly insane day to day.
And who disguised as a radio show? actually, is a investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which, by the way, doesn't make us really special. It just means we have more money under management than some other folks. I mean, if you have – basically, there's a line somewhere around $100 million, and if an organization is managing and rendering investment advice – that was interesting.
Yes.
On
power just went off and back on in the studio.
On $100 million or more – then they register with the Securities and Exchange Commission. If they are less than $100 million, then they register with the state. And we're registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which makes us really cool.
Air conditioning makes us really cool. Registering with the Securities and Exchange Commission makes us nerds.
But it does not imply any special certifications or abilities. However, the guy over here in the plaid.
That would be me, the other bald guy.
He is a SEMA.
That's a Certified Investment Management Analyst, which means absolutely nothing to the majority of people that hear it.
Well, I'd say, I'm a Certified Financial Planner Practitioner, so there.
Yeah, so that's another word that probably
no,
most
just,
people
no,
have
no,
an
no,
idea. Bet more people have an idea what a CFP is.
Yeah, that's, but it comes back to, but I'm not a, I can't be a CFP, I have to be a CFP practitioner.
Yes, but the mark. ACFP
yes,
mark.
Yes,
I'm people
branded.
Know what that is.
Yeah, but that simply means it really comes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. We're both certifiable.
Yes, we are. We have designations in our certifiability.
Yeah, we hang up we on have, the wall the fact that we're certifiable.
We have studied long to be certifiable.
Anyway, if you'd like to call in and ask a couple of crazy guys a question, 773-1400 is the telephone number to call in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
And of course, the big news of the day is that the Greece was flooded by a torrential thunderstorm.
I believe that's your big news of the day, and it's probably bigger than any of the news that
Well, Fox News thinks it's really important.
The Greece was flooded
You have flooded Greece.
As in the thing that's in the pan or the country?
The country.
Oh, the country is flooded.
Right. But actually, it's just Athens, but to them, because that's where the reporters are, Greece is flooded.
Yes, of course.
By a torrential thunderstorm. Not just your average thunderstorm, mind you, but a torrential thunderstorm.
So torrents were involved.
Yes, yes.
Right, okay.
Bit torrents. Anyway, the stock market. I guess we better talk about something to do with economics.
Well, maybe.
The stock market, generally speaking, we talk about the very, 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 very broad measures of it, fell 0.3% last year, week.
Last week, yes.
Last week, yeah, but it's still up like 6.3% for the year. Interestingly enough, the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index is up a bunch more, which is a technical term.
A bunch.
Right.
It's applied for bananas, grapes, and the stock market.
Like, year-to-date, like, cool, dude. The NASDAQ, which is normally considered to be, it used to be called the National Association of Securities Dealers, quotes, and then they dropped the name and just kept the acronym, which is really weird. But it's the little stocks that are supposed to be super and some big stocks that are supposed to be super. The problem is something unusual has happened here. It's up a whopping 4.71% for the year. The Standard & Poor's 500, which is bigger stocks and smaller stocks and, you know, is the granddaddy of all of them, is up 6.27%. And even when we look at 52 weeks, the S&P 500 is up almost 11%. And the NASDAQ is up 6.68. It's kind of an unusual way of looking at it.
We're proving here.
That we're nerds.
Yeah, we're proving that this is an exiting show. Because what we do at the beginning of the program is we just read off a bunch of numbers and acronyms, and we act very excited about it.
I've been doing it a long time.
But, you know, sports shows do the same thing. They read off numbers and acronyms and expect people to be excited. Mm-hmm. I don't know why people aren't as excited about this.
When I was working in radio back in 1970.
Wait a minute. They had radio back then?
Yeah. Let me tell you, it was the same.
Oh, that was before they had
panels,
TV.
Right.
I understand.
Oh, okay. It's back before the hills got dusty. But it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was working the swing shift on, and we did not have computerized radio back then, so there had to actually be a human being sitting there playing records, and the way we got the news was to go rip it off from the
literally
from the AP printer, which is going in the background all the time. And I got it out and I was really tired, so I read, there's this long list of basketball scores. And I was supposed to read them. And I got really, really tired. 3 o'clock in the morning. Nobody is listening. I was confident. So I read off the basketball scores. 103-98. 68-72.
You didn't say who did it.
And I thought, and then I discovered there were more people
lots
listening.
Lots of people listening.
radio was big at that time. And we probably had like 12 outside lines, all 12 lit up. It started flashing at me, and I thought, well, at least we had 12 people listening. And then I went through and hung up on all of them.
You know, in the history
and
of...
guess what? They all lit up again.
Oh, wow. There's something wrong with the phone system. They keep hanging up on me. Yes, I think in the history of radio, just like the history of movies, before they had color, they had black and white. Before they had black and white, they had silent movies.
And with silent radio.
Right. Silent radio existed well before radio.
Well, actually, it was there. You just couldn't hear it.
Yeah, and people were trying to yell across the radio. It just wasn't working very well. It was working very well in the silent category.
Well, actually, the radio signals were coming in. They were coming in from the sun and the stars, oh, yeah. And they were going...
Yeah, but all of our transmissions were in silence.
Right, the sound of silence.
Yes, and then...
There was a song about that.
The people, the mimes, were put out of business in droves by radio because, you know, then the talkies came out and...
Well, mimes are different from memes.
It's true. The internet has memes. The radio didn't have mimes.
Right. Right. Got it.
Man, are we in a mood today.
Anyway, the telephone numbers to call in here are 773-1400 or...
1-866-597-1400.
Speaking of, as we were in nerdy numbers a little earlier, some of the nerdy numbers make me kind of happy.
Yes.
Hedge fund managers, you know, the super hedge funds that have gotten out there and are so famous for having these huge, wonderful, magnificent returns. And now we're discovering that many, if not most, of the huge, wonderful, magnificent returns were generated by people who were cheating. So now they're going to jail.
Yay.
And but now that the fear of insider trading and illegal activity has been loaded on the hedge fund managers, hedge funds are up 3% this year. And... that is an indication of the fact that what they were doing did not have long-term validity. Another interesting number that I saw today, the mere fact that I see interesting numbers says
this number is very interesting.
Woo, very interesting number.
This is the number two. It's right. Very interesting.
Well, look like this. I was getting so overly excited by these numbers that I stopped for a few minutes while I was researching this morning and determined how many light years there are in a parsec.
Okay.
Approximately 2.62 light years per parsec.
Well, that is very useful information.
Yes, and I had to figure that out, right.
The next time I go to Florida, I will need that.
Right.
Somehow.
Yes. Anyway, gold is down 5% this year.
Yes, it is. But it's still at just over $1,500 an ounce.
But the mere fact that it's descending in price this year, declining in price this year, is fascinating because the market was dropped a couple of percent this week. As a matter of fact, on Tuesday, the S&P 500 hit a five-year high, and then there was some discussion in the Federal Reserve minutes that were released about they may actually come off of a 0% interest rate sometime in the distant future, because some people are thinking they may this may be causing distortions in the financial markets, and this caused the stock market to drop about 2 or 3% in a day or so, and normally, we would see at that point, historically, the fear factor jumps in and gold prices would rise. But instead of gold prices rising, guess what they did?
They fell.
They fell.
Yes.
Which is an indicator, at least to me, that what I read recently about why gold prices are up is probably true. The Chinese were buying gold as an offset to inflation. For those of you who didn't hear me talk about this before, there's an article that I read that's an academic article, and I won't go into the details on it, but it pointed out that the cash flows into China, the capital cash flows into China, which have to go somewhere, they would normally be converted into the local currency, the renminbi.
Yeah, the capital cash flows, we're talking about when we have a balance of trade issue with China. Everybody talks about that.
Issue.
We're buying more things from China than we're selling to China. Well, where does that extra money go? That's what we're talking about.
Well, that, they figured, was mostly coming back and buying T-bills and
Correct.
Things like that. But
Correct.
There's another capital cash flow into China that's actually even bigger than the balance of trade issue. China has a negative balance of trade and has for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But the investing,
Thank you, Germany.
The investing money going into China to buy things in China and mm-hmm. leave them there, build things, is huge. And historically, when a developing economy like China's gets huge inflows of investment money, that's capital, they get inflation. Because that money has to be converted into the local currency before it can be spent.
Correct.
And so there gets to be too much local currency floating around, which provides inflation. Now, the Chinese have simply said, we won't allow our currency to leave the country, so we'll control what it's valued at. But how are they doing that? I mean, it's almost like a miracle. And then this this professor figured out something. He noted that the excess capital cash flow, and that's the investment going into China minus the investment going out, is basically flowing into gold, which is why the price of gold has been going up. And now that China is stabilizing,
it's not going into gold as fast.
And,
it's
well,
actually being converted back into money.
They're actually converting the gold. The Chinese are converting the gold they own. Remember, we said some time ago that the price of gold was going up because in India and China, they're buying gold. Well, it turned out that a lot of the purchases in India really weren't purchases in India.
They were purchases in India made by China in India.
You got it.
Right.
A lot of Chinese activity in India, and they are purchasing the gold there and shipping it to China. But what it boils down to is it makes perfectly good sense because the Chinese now have a negative trade balance. They're having to buy more stuff and bring it in and leave it in the country and not export. And they're starting to sell off their gold to finance their trade balance differential. And lo and behold, the price of gold is starting back down again at about, by the way, the same rate that it went up.
Yeah.
I mean, 5% in less than 2 months is a heck of a drop.
Do you see who the majority of the major purchases of gold have been during this time when the gold prices have been going down? This is fascinating.
American individuals.
No, although that would be great. South Africa and Russia.
That's weird.
The reason here, and this is...
Oh, to try to hold the price of gold
up. Correct. This is conspiracy theory 101, only it's actually happening because sometimes conspiracies are real.
Are you saying that even paranoids have enemies?
I am saying exactly that. When De Beers buys diamonds, it's because somebody just found a new diamond mine that De Beers hasn't purchased yet. And when Russia buys gold or South Africa buys gold, these are two countries that are the number one producers of gold. If they're buying gold on the market when they're the number one producers, the only reason to do that is to keep the gold price up. And they are buying gold in large quantities right now.
They are, yes. And that's, which probably means, by the way, that gold hit its peak.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I would agree with that. When the producers are buying it to keep the price up and there's more people going into the market trying to find gold and there is a massive amount of gold exploration going on out there, there's just only so much that Russia and South Africa can buy before the technology increases. You know, we're able to find gold much more efficiently than we used to. It's a matter of time before that drops back down.
Yeah, and an interesting thing, sometimes you can look at what I refer to as the smart money that really is smart and get some indications that there's generally some indications. They're not solid. You can't lock onto them. But gold mining companies' shares have not risen as gold has risen at anywhere near the same route. Normally, gold mining company shares, in other words, Barrick, for example, Barrick Gold Mining or Merrick Mining, has a tendency to rise at about the same rate historically over many, many years as gold. But yeah, they rose for a while, and then they've just kind of stagnated. The earnings of the companies aren't up significantly. They're up a lot, but they're not up hugely. So what, you know, if the price of gold is that high, what the heck's going on?
And I can tell you
some
of that.
There's a distortion in the market.
There is a distortion in the market, and that's, you know, some of the gold prices are artificially propped up. But the other end of that is, as the price of gold has gone up, it's become profitable at the same rate to go into places that it wasn't profitable to go into to mine before. So going into places where it's harder to get into and harder to get out of, it means it's more expensive to get the gold. You can still make a profit, but it's at the same rate as what you were doing in the easier areas before, but the easier areas are pretty well panned out.
I'm glad you understand. Panned out. Ooh.
Yeah, I see what I did there.
a little irony there.
Had to throw that one in there. You were talking about grease, I'm talking about pans.
You got it. Well, there's a flood in the grease pan.
And turkey should be on the horizon somewhere, too. If we're going to have grease and pans, and we might as well have turkey.
I'm sure it's in there. I just didn't look it up this week. But anyway, the hidden geek, or perhaps not very well hidden geek in me and Jeff.
Yes, not very hidden
has
at all.
Been very, very disturbed over the years by the fact that the price of gold has been rising for no particular reason. there's always a reason when the price of something goes up and keeps going up and keeps going up when its intrinsic value does not match the price.
Right.
Years ago, we had an association with a company that was owned by Aegon NV.
Netherlands.
Of the Netherlands, which is one of the bigger, it's like ING and a number of others, is one of the bigger insurance holding companies. And the price on Aegon just kept going up and kept going up and kept going up. And I couldn't figure it out. And they were giving me options, by the way. They were giving me shares, which is really scary. And finally, I sold off all the shares and refused to take any more because something was squirrely there. And I know that sounds kind of weird, but I did it anyway.
There were squirrels in the stocks.
It must have been. And it turned out that, well, you know, I sold out at about 48. It finally went up to 62, and it's now down to about 3. Turned out that there's this big trust in the Netherlands that owns the majority of Aegon shares, and they were taking all of their dividends and turning around and buying Aegon shares in a very thin market where there was not a lot of trading going on. And so people were not selling, but this trust was buying. And why was the trust buying? Well, it turns out that the employees of Aegon, senior employees of Aegon, meaning the executives, constituted the board of directors for the trust, and they all had options.
Amazing.
And they were buying the stock using the trust funds, and they got to exercise their options at higher and higher and higher prices. And
it's great stuff.
Finally, when the financial crisis came along, and all of a sudden they had to go to the Netherlands government on their knees and beg, please, please, please give us money or we'll go out of business.
It's really hard for the Netherlands government to look at them and say, well, yes, just continue this little thing that you've got going where...
Well, they had to stop paying dividends, right. And then, of course, they couldn't buy the stock, and it fell from $62 to $3. Actually, it was down to $1.77 at one point.
We're just comparing this to any time you have any form of manipulation, and we're talking about gold. Gold is a very easily manipulated commodity. Futures on gold is regulated. It's very difficult to manipulate because regulators will come out and say you're in trouble for that. But the actual gold, the raw metal, is very easy to manipulate. And if you have any doubt about that, you hear all of these great things about the price of gold right now. It's over $1,500 an ounce. Try going to any of those We Buy Gold places. First, measure out the amount of gold that you have.
Right.
Then say, this is an equivalent of a whole ounce of gold. That should be about $1,500. You go to the place that says, we buy gold. There should be a warning placed in anyone's mind when the advertising methodology is someone standing on a street spinning a sign. That should be a warning to you. You show up at the place and you say, I should get $1,500 for this. And they say, we will give you $150 for this. And you go, what is your markup?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
they have a Marxist markup.
Yes, they do. what I'm saying there is not that they're breaking any laws. In fact, the opposite is true. Buyer beware is very important here.
Yeah, when you get into gold and other commodities, it's not regulated by the SEC, right. Folks, or anybody else for that matter.
They can pay you whatever they want.
Yeah.
They can say, I'll give you a dollar for that. And the only person that says no to that should be you. You should be saying no to that when they say they'll give you a dollar, because they'll turn around and sell it for $1,500. And that is because they have a tap into the much larger market. That's a much more liquid market, because they take that gold to a group of people that all buy it at auction. So anyway, that seems to me like there'd be some methodology in there to undercut a lot of these middlemen, but it's not happening right now. And the reason why it's not happening right now is because the smart people are looking at it and saying, this is a temporary bubble. It's not something that we need to jump in and fix.
This is the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
I didn't even say our last name.
I didn't
expect it.
Did you have a short-term memory loss? Or
what were we talking about again?
Got it. Anyway, the telephone numbers to call in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we're going to make a valiant attempt to play commercials. So we got
we've been told that they don't work, but we'll see.
If the commercials are playing, we're playing commercials. And if they're not playing, we're going to come back on the air.
not playing. So, yes, we are back.
Solved that problem. So the commercial looks like it's playing, but it's not really playing. So we're just going to keep talking. Oh, goodness. So you're going to cause traffic accidents?
We have to talk?
Yeah.
What?
Tick. Tick.
Tick, tick.
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 We have ways of making it talk.
Tick, talk.
Yes, anyway.
Tick, talk. Yes.
Boy, we're really... Hey, I got. There's another little
this
piece.
This is horrible.
We haven't talked about the Great Sequestration.
Yes, that's on my list of things.
Yeah, we'll get to there. But I want to talk about cotton first.
Cotton.
Cotton.
Yeah, is cotton being sequestered?
No. It's being equestered.
I have been told to keep my cotton picking hands off of many things. So
right. Well, really fascinating thing. The Chinese government has encouraged the growth of cotton because most. Apparently, a lot of people in China wear cotton. And
amazing.
They have grown a lot of cotton. The farmers in China have grown a lot of cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And the good government of China, has been buying up the cotton with the intent of stabilizing the prices and making the farmers happy.
Oh, well, that's nice of them.
And since most of their cotton is picked by hand, it also keeps the migrant worker population, which is somewhat larger than the population of the United States,
yes,
happy.
It's
okay?
Like about 350 million people is their migrant worker population.
So now they have, in round figures, about a bajillion tons of cotton.
That's a technical term, and
right.
I realize it will be hard for you to calculate in bajillions, but that's how much.
And yeah. When they go to try to sell it, nobody wants to buy it.
Amazing.
Instead, they're buying it, much of it, from the United States.
And why would this be?
Because we produce cotton a lot cheaper than even after their tariffs and taxes and everything else. Our cotton is about the same price as their cotton, but our cotton is much better quality because we know how to grow cotton.
Yes, and this is the crux point. We have a caller waiting.
Yes.
But the crux point here, when we talk about jobs that are being shipped overseas, we've been saying this for years and years. It's kind of a fact of nature. Jobs that are exported are generally replaced within a decade by a machine somewhere. And what we do in the United States and how we pick cotton, we haven't picked cotton by hand since the 1950s. Although you did have me go out and pick cotton in a
right.
field just so that I would
right.
have a little bit of experience of what you experienced in your
childhood.
And when
the cotton balls get rotten, you can't pick very much cotton.
Right. And it does hurt the hands, but
right.
that, if they're... That's a very inefficient method of getting cotton out of the field. We do it very efficiently, and so machines...
But we also grow much better cotton than they
right.
do. Our cotton is long leaf, theirs is short leaf.
And our machines cause the price of our cotton to be a lot lower than even subsidized cotton mm-hmm. hand-picked in China.
What they've discovered is if they're going to sell cotton, export it, it needs to be long leaf cotton or people don't want to wear it because it feels kind of scratchy and looks
yeah,
cheap.
It's no fun.
And they've also discovered that the people in China who are buying cotton clothing generally are moving up in income, and they want long-leaf cotton, guess
yeah,
what?
They don't want scratchy clothes? I don't know what the thing is.
Yeah.
That's
but we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. It seems like there's a lot of doom and gloom into the world scenarios, and yet the S&P and Dow are at record levels. One's not buying into the other and vice versa, and I'd like your opinion on that. I'm going to hang
Ooh.
Up.
All right, thank
this
you.
This is good stuff.
We pay him to
yeah,
call.
That's the sort of question that we dream about. We have these
yes.
wonderful
3 o'clock in the morning.
Like, yes, I hope someone calls and says, why is the market going up when people are so scared? Do you want to do it, or you want me to do it?
I can. Yeah, I'd love to. We maybe both do it.
Yeah.
We can do it for the next 2 hours.
Yeah, I will begin.
In the beginning.
The market is counterintuitive because we create the environment. And boy, does that sound like I'm coming into some kind of deep philosophy or something
mm-hmm.
here. But the reality is that if people are afraid, then they have likely already sold. If they're really afraid, they're likely to have gotten out of the market. That leaves only the people that expect good things. John Templeton has a couple of really good quotes here. The simplest one is, bull markets climb a wall of worry. And what that means is that once all of the people that are losing money sell, they're just out of it. I don't want to be involved anymore. It only leaves the buyers in the market. And that's what we're seeing right now. The gloom and doom is everywhere. And the more I see it, the more happy I get. I get happier and happier. Every time I pick up the Wall Street Journal, there's quotes about that. Buy when the blood is on the street. When you feel like you've been kicked in the gut when you looked at the Wall Street Journal, that's the time to buy. These are all statements made by the greatest investors of any generation.
Well, I have a couple things to say about that. First off, the difference between what you perceive from the media presentation and the reality of economics is about as big right now as I have ever encountered it.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
Let me give you an example. For the last, Glenn Beck started it, and now a lot of other people are hollering and screaming that we're going to have runaway inflation because the Fed is, quote, printing
right.
money, and I'm sure you've seen that.
Yeah. Everybody's heard that.
We just got the January report in on consumer prices, and they are flat. Zero inflation.
Flat.
Zero. Now, if we pull out food and fuel, which is a variable,
we have deflation.
We actually have deflation going on. So the fear-mongering, and believe me, I got a lot of emails and telephone calls over the last several years about this supposed runaway inflation that's going to hit us in the collapse of the dollar. And I'm sure you've heard those too. And the fact is that inflation has been virtually zero. Now, let's go into something else. Interesting thing in the Wall Street Journal, real-time economics. The dollar rises against global currencies. And what we've seen, particularly since the beginning of 2012, is about a 5% rise in the value of the dollar against this so-called basket, this cumulative group of other major currencies that are traded around the world. Those two things alone tell us that the dollar is not losing value. And matter of fact, deflation would indicate the dollar on the local markets is increasing in value, which can be disastrous because your loan, basically, if you have a loan outstanding on a mortgage or something like that, basically the payment, even though it's fixed in number of dollars, would go up every month. If the dollar drops in value, the payment goes down. If the effect of the payment goes down, if the dollar increases in value, we call that deflation here in the United States, but increases locally, domestically, then effectively a larger and larger portion of your income has to go to pay on your debts, and that's where we get depressions. That's where we get defaults. We had some pretty good-sized deflation going on for a while. In the world economies, the dollar in the last about 12 months has risen by 5%. Now, that is not an indication that there's something wrong with our own economy. Quite the contrary, the Federal Reserve is working very, very hard to try to offset that because it could really mess up our export market. If the prices of American goods and services rise 5%, we potentially have a real problem out there, because it's hard to sell things to people when your prices are going up. The American economy is actually very healthy. Yes, we went through a real mess where about $16 trillion disappeared out of the economy in the collapse that bottomed out in 2009. We have been repairing that, and we're continuing to repair it, which gives us some slowdown in the domestic economy. Let me give you an example. Since 2008, I just saw that through the end of, through the middle of last year, the consumer debt carried by younger households.
Right.
It's an interesting little culmination of things. Now, the total debt, total debt, including mortgages and everything else,
mortgage
has dropped by 30%.
Cars, mortgages, credit cards,
right.
Student loans, everything.
Now, older households have also dropped their debt, but not a great deal. So that what we have now is the older households now owed about 1.22 times their annual income, and the younger households are owing about 1.46. Well, that's actually quite healthy. But this is a key thing to understand. In the midst of all this gloom and doom, people are paying. People who were stretched are paying down their debts. They're refinancing their debts to lower interest rates. They're having a lower chunk of their money taken away. Their savings rate is up. The gross domestic product of the United States is considerably higher than it was in 2007. The inflation rate is near zero.
We have negative.
We have just somewhere near zero, up or down. And that's because the Federal Reserve is working really, really hard to keep it from being
pumping
negative.
A lot of money in.
We have, as far as the government is concerned, I know you hear all kinds of terrible negative things about what will happen if this goes on for the next 30 years. But the fact of the matter is that the United States government public debt is the lowest of any developed country on the planet.
I realize that people will say, wait a minute, what are you talking about? The Congressional Budget Office.
Do you know what you're talking about?
I generally don't.
Okay, good.
The Congressional Budget Office came out last week with a number that agrees completely with the number.
They came out with a number?
Yes, a number that we've been basically talking about for how many years? 3 or 4 years.
Sesame Street came out with 5 numbers last week.
Was the whole episode brought to us by the number 5?
There was a different number every day.
Wow.
So they came out with 5 numbers.
And the Congressional Budget Office
only came out with one number.
Sesame Street is much more efficient.
Right.
But what they said is that the national debt, United States national debt, is about 73% of GDP. Now, if you look at the number
we're down from 76. That's good.
Right. If you look at the number that is often quoted, of $16 trillion, and you look at our GDP of about $15 trillion, you say, how in the world is our national debt, which obviously is being quoted by the same Congressional Budget Office that just said this, at $16 trillion, and our GDP is at $15 trillion, and how is 16 less than 15?
How is 16 less than 15?
Exactly, because that's what it appears to be, where the Congressional Budget Office says
this is the Sesame Street issue.
This is 70. This larger number is 76% of a smaller number. And
you said finance was counterintuitive.
Yes, it is very counterintuitive. And the reason is because a lot of that debt is debt owed by the government to the government itself. It owes itself money. And it can just say, oh, I'm not going to pay me back.
Now, the voters might not agree with that.
Right. The voters might say, wait a minute, you have to pay you back. But the end result is that it's not that they have to pay themselves back in a lump sum. They pay themselves back every year.
And for a long time.
Over a long, long time. And it never actually is weighed against the debt that they accrued against themselves before, which is where it gets really complicated.
They can change the rules. Now,
what it comes back down to is this is imaginary debt.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to borrow $500 from my savings account to pay groceries this month, and I'll pay myself back over time. Well, you write your little IOU to yourself, and then it's time to go to Florida and go to Disney World. And you say, you know, I'm going to push that off. I never owe the $500. I'll put $20 more back into my savings account, and I'm going to spend this other money that I was going to put in my savings account on Disney World. Well, that's what the government's doing with Social Security Trust Fund and all of that. They took money from their income and said, I'll pay myself back, and they are not obligated any more than the IOU to yourself would be. You can change that IOU, and just like Congress can go to the Social Security Administration and say, I realize that I said I was going to pay myself back, but what we're going to do is we're going to cast a vote. Oh, we're not paying ourselves back.
And
what happens to the money? Well, it's imaginary money to begin with. It's already been spent.
And to give you an example, a big piece of our future debt is Social Security. I mean,
Medicare, Social Security.
When somebody from Congress quotes how terrible the debt is, or the news media talks how terrible the debt is, they're talking about the present value of future Social Security payments. In other words, how much do we have to deposit today in the mythical Social Security Trust Fund, which is just a fiction?
Al Gore's lock a box.
Lock a box, yes. And how much do we have to deposit in there today to generate enough interest and principal to pay Social Security in the future. Well, they've really
put a whole bunch in there because the interest rates are so low.
But there's a the whole issue is the lower interest rates are, the bigger amount of money we owe the Social Security trust fund. So when interest rates go up, not if, but when interest rates go up,
our debt's going to go down.
Our total debt will go down.
The reason, and
our debt payments will go up.
It sounds like we just talked about voodoo here. People are going, "What in the world are they?" Okay,
voodoo economics.
The debt
that was Reagan's economics.
Right? Yeah. Well, George Bush said that about
when he was
Ronald
campaigning
Reagan,
against Ronald Reagan,
right, before
voodoo,
he was vice president.
Yeah,
voodoo economics. What it amounts to, and this comes back to this. When you owe money and you say, yes, and many of us do, we look at the amount of money that we will have to pay, for instance, a mortgage. Over the lifetime of the mortgage, we look at 30 years. How much interest are we going to be paying on that? Well, we have to know what the interest rate is. Most of us have fixed rate interest rates on our mortgages. Well, Congress has a variable interest rate on its Social Security loans to itself, which means that when interest rates go up, they have to have less money on deposit with themselves, and the money itself isn't really on deposit either. It's an IOU. So this is why we're getting into voodoo.
You're causing people to drive off the highway.
We're having an exiting
economic
show.
Economic.
It's
yes,
very
it's
exiting. Yeah. People are exiting.
You know, they got that sign up there. No trucks left lane.
Yes. No trucks left any lane.
Right. Yes. Except that if they're listening to us,
they left all the lanes.
They left all the lanes, and we're probably causing traffic accidents again. Now, the telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
A short answer to the question is why the stock market is going up in the face of this worry is simple. Is fairly
simple.
The stock market has really not been going up. I know that sounds strange.
It's very strange.
The price-earnings ratio of the stock market today and back in 2009 is very similar from one time to the next. And in 2009, if you recall, the stock market bottomed at about 6,000. The Dow bottomed at 6,700. People track the Dow a lot more than they do the S&P 500. So, and today, the Dow this week has stayed up over 1,400 all week.
14,000.
14,000. I'm sorry, 14,000.
You're dating yourself. 6,700.
Yeah, I remember when it was 14. I remember when it was 1,000.
Yeah.
But the Dow is up over 14,000. So the trip from just under 7,000 to 14,000, not counting the dividends that the Dow has, when it has a bunch, the market has doubled since 2009.
Except
so in about 5 years, that's about it's coming up on 5 years now. So that's about a 15% average annual rate of return.
And what we just said is that it hasn't really gone up at all.
But that's because the earnings of companies in the United States have doubled over that time period.
It's the same price as it was at the bottom of the market.
And to say, you know, you're right. You hear a lot about doom and gloom, and at least part of that means I can tell you in advance, I can tell you without a moment's hesitation, you're listening to Fox.
Yes.
Fox is the station of doom and gloom.
Right now.
And it represents the party of no. And
well, right
that's
now.
Only because there is a Democrat in the White House.
Yes. If we go back just a little bit, if we go back to when George W. Bush was president.
Uh-huh.
Fox was the
party of yes.
Party of yes, and it was talking about how good things were.
Yes.
It's a very clear delineation. MSNBC was the channel of no and the party of no, and now is the channel of yes and the party of yes. And that is
Rupert Murdoch owns Fox.
Right, and he knows how to make money. What you do to make money in media is the same thing you have always done to make money in media.
Bad news sells advertising.
Absolutely. And when you know who your constituents are, you know who your readers are, you know who your watchers are, you apply news that you know they will want to read, watch, or listen to. It's very simple stuff. This is Market 101. And anyone that doubts that media companies are in this to make money, just go and look at their shareholders. That's who they answer to.
And it really boils down to the fact that there are a lot of people out there who have made a tremendous amount of money over generating an atmosphere of gloom. Many of them, if not most of them, make their money by selling you gold. If you're worried, you will tend to buy gold.
Here's a really, really good example of what we were just talking about. Rush Limbaugh, during the first presidential election in which Barack Obama became president, Michelle Obama said that she has begun to take pride in our country.
For the first time. She's proud of the United States.
Yes. So Rush Limbaugh was rather upset at her to think that somebody should be that unpatriotic.
To not be proud of the United States.
Well, this week, Rush Limbaugh said, for the first time, I'm ashamed of our country.
So he's not proud of our country.
And the only difference
is channeling Michelle Obama.
The only difference is who's in power.
Oh.
It's very easy to be ashamed of a country when your party's not in power and the decisions that are being made aren't the ones that you agree with.
No, it's
pretty
not.
Simple.
No, I'm not going to be ashamed.
It's easy to do. I'm not ashamed. I think that we elected a president. We've elected a lot of presidents, actually, but the president in office.
We set a precedent in electing the president.
Right. We elected them. Yeah, I didn't vote for him, but he's my president. And that means that I'm going to respect the office, and I'm going to keep calm and carry on. I just did a meme there. Just thought you should know.
Keep calm and carry on. That's a meme?
Yes, it's a meme.
Well, there's actually a really, really good song by Fun called Carry On.
Yes. It's a good band and good song.
Well, again, going without commercials for all this
time. It's interesting.
773-1400 if you're in East Bell County is the number to call. 773-1400. Let me say it again.
If you wish.
773-1400. Now you can tell them the toll-free number.
Okay. 1-866-597-1400. Should I say that three times as well? I'm just going to say it one more time. 1-866-597-1400.
And this is the personal wealth coach. And Jake has something he wants to report.
Yes. People that talk about inflation being a problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we get in. They're particularly Fox News, but all the stations have been covering this. The currency war. You know, the battle between currencies and the raging battles of...
What currency war?
Right. Exactly. What is going on in the baskets of currencies as they're measured against each other. It's very, very hard to measure this stuff. But the Wall Street Journal just came out with a really, really effective means of measuring, and I really like it.
A really, really?
A really, really. I'll say really some more.
Is it the McDonald's? No.
Starbucks.
Starbucks. Wow,
Starbucks.
That's better than McDonald's.
Even better than McDonald's, because one of the things that, and when we talk about the value of currency, we can say against each other, but what that doesn't talk about is the internal cost of doing business. So in the United States, the cost of doing business is different than in Seoul, Korea. You know, and this Wall Street Journal article, it's an infographic.
Whoa, okay.
It has the price it would take to buy the same, it's a 16-ounce Grand Latte at Starbucks.
Cool. Latte, okay. Grande. You have to say
whatever it,
first.
It is. Yeah, it's,
Grande Latte.
I call them Grand. I show up and I say, I'd like a Grand, please. And they go, I think, like, I want a Grand. Just give me a Grand.
But you have to say Grand Latte. Grande
right.
Latte or Latte Grande.
A Grand Late. I want a Grand
Actually,
Late.
It's Latte Grande, I think.
In Oslo, that one drink, 16-ounce drink, would cost $9.83. If you took our dollars and you converted them over to
into Oslo's.
Oslo currency, it would cost $9.83.
Kronar, by the way.
Yes, and that is rather expensive. In New York, the same coffee.
And you'd have to convert it into the local
right,
currency in New York.
Right, you'd have to take the dollar and convert it to Yankee whatever. You know, it was $4.30.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So any of you that were out there going, man, that's a lot of money. $9 and whatever cents for it in Oslo went, well, we're spending almost about $5. $4.30 on coffee in New York.
Which costs them about 75 cents, by the way.
So what that tells us is that Oslo, the currency exchange rate in Oslo is twice, more than twice, as expensive as it is in New York.
People well, say, you know, you have to. It's these staples of life. You can live without food, without water, without shelter, but you
coffee.
Gotta have
coffee
not
is
just
important.
Any coffee.
Starbucks.
You gotta have your Starbucks Grande Latte.
Right.
Okay.
So Oslo, Stockholm, Moscow, Zurich, Helsinki, Athens. These are all
Would you translate that into English, please? Stop speaking foreign languages.
Excuse my French.
Okay.
Yes. All of these are much more expensive than the Starbucks that we would have in the United States.
Uh-huh.
Which comes back to when people are saying the dollar is weak, this is horrible. I have to remind you of something.
Remind them of something.
I will remind them.
Please.
Yes. When we export goods to other countries.
Uh-huh. We want a weak dollar.
We want a weak dollar because that means they will buy more of what we're exporting. And back home, that dollar is the same value as it was yesterday and the day before because we're not having inflation here. What we're seeing is deflation in Northern Europe, which causes their currency to be stronger and stronger and stronger. And that deflation means that when Russia or Greece or any number of Belgium wants to sell items to us and we're making the same item here, we don't have to have a tariff to make our prices even. Our prices are less because they created, using their currency, a stronger currency. They bring it here and it's more expensive. So recognize that when you hear the currency wars and you hear the weak dollar on the world scale, it is harder on us when we want to go to Oslo. I don't know anybody that's been to Oslo lately to buy coffee.
Yeah,
It is a lot better for our overall economy for them to want to buy things that we're selling them. And if you compare the currency exchange, the kronor is not twice the dollar. But if you look at Starbucks, you realize some things. If Starbucks coffee, it costs money to get that coffee in a cup. You have to pay the people involved. You have to pay for the taxes, and the value-added tax is pretty nasty there. You've got all these other taxes. The cost of doing business is another weight on the value of the currency. And there. Now we're almost out of time for this hour.
That's good. Because, you know, the currency of time is still the currency of time.
I was very impressed that they put together the Starbucks currency
exchange. They were using, or somebody came up with the McDonald's cost, the McDonald's index. I think it's still out there.
Right.
Which reveals very much the same thing. And this is all in response to that question, why is the market going up if everything's so bad? Things ain't bad, folks.
Yeah.
They're good.
Things are really good.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We did it.
We did. We actually said our names.
Yay! And as I said at the beginning of the show, it's not a show. It's a program.
Program.
Yeah. Well, in my mind, it's a show.
We're showing each other.
Yeah. Well, we're showing up each other. We are also two managing principals in an investment advisory firm, and we manage portfolios for people who have enough money that it's serious business. And you can reach us. There's a voicemail over the weekend. Of course, you can call during the week. 947-1111 is the local number. Otherwise,
also 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. You can also go to our website. We have podcasts available of more exiting programs at thepersonalwealthcoach.com.
We'll be back next hour with more of The Personal Wealth Coach. Well, I said we would. Actually, the news was supposed to start right there.
Do you have a dial or something you need to turn up?
Fox News Radio.
That's
I'm Chris Foster.